Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and to my left, Weasel. No Chris because he's trying to be a firefighter. Hey, but let's be real. There were all sorts of fires going on all over the place. Super Bowl Sunday in effect yesterday. And really, it was supposed to be the climax, the culmination to a wonderful postseason.
Number one offense versus number one defense.
Yeah. Well, they say that offense wins games, which the Broncos did, but the adage also goes that defense wins championships, which is exactly what the Seahawks did. Folks, for those of you who are old enough to know who Dr. Spock is and what he's did in parenting back, say, like the late 70s, early 80s or so, right? Well, he didn't believe in spanking, and he would not have watched this game because the Seahawks spanked Denver Broncos 43-8. See, Weasel, you didn't know where I was going with that, did you?
I was wondering a little bit.
Did I take you to a good place? Was that?
I liked it.
Okay, okay. There we go. See, I don't know. Did you know who Dr. Spock was other than the Star Trek character?
I do.
Yeah, I mean, because, if it was a Star Trek character, I would have just gone this way. Any excuse to play the con is a good one. I'm just saying, you know. And the game, we'll get into the game and exactly what went wrong, as in, well, everything. But at least for the Broncos, if you're a Seahawks fan, hey, you're riding high. If you were somebody who picked the Seahawks, like Weasel did back on September 2nd.
And what about the Broncos? I picked them,
too. Oh, yeah, you picked the exact Super Bowl.
The matchup.
GFM. Weasel Weeze!
Yeah, boy!
There you go. And hey, what can I say? You know, you nailed it. Chris was close. He picked the Broncos and the 49ers. Still had the NFC winning, and which I think would have happened if that game didn't end with the Seahawks winning in the NFC Championship game, because, hey, let me tell you what, the Niners defense only a little less good than the Seahawks defense is. And regardless about how you felt about Richard Sherman or any of that mess, dude, the Seahawks played a fantastic game defensively. But we'll break all that down first. First, let's start out with the less football stuff, like we do every year here on the Student of the Game. When it comes time to break down the Super Bowl, you got to go with the stuff that's like, what is it, $3 million for 30 seconds or something?
Yeah, pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, hey, they paid all that money for it. We might as well talk a little bit of schmack about it. The commercials, the Super Bowl commercials, what is, what was, and what really got you entertained or not. And I'm going to say overall, I've said it before on this show, Weasel, when it comes to Super Bowls, we've been spoiled lately, right? I mean, going back, we had the Giants. What was it? The 18-0 Patriots, 18-1 by the end of the year. 18 wins, one giant loss. See what they did there. But that Super Bowl was fantastic. The Packers-Steelers one was a bigger gap, but was still pretty good. What was it? Steelers-Cardinals, fantastic Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. The second Giants-Patriots, fantastic Super Bowl. We were due for a stinker, and boy, did we get it. And this year, the commercials were even disappointing, I thought, overall. But we have our top three going in here. Weasel, what you got?
Well, start off with the best. Well, my top three would be Budweiser's Puppy Love. It was one of those warm and fuzzy ones.
You dig those sentimental commercials, man. We'll walk people through it. First of all, commercial's already a success because Weasel remember whose it was for.
Exactly. So you got this puppy sneaking out of an adoption place. And so he goes to visit his friend. It's a Budweiser horse.
The Clydesdale.
The Clydesdale.
Most importantly.
Now, the guy that takes care of the Clydesdales brings him back to the adoption place. And the puppy, he just goes over back and forth to, see his buddy. And it looks like, he gets adopted by a family. And as they're driving off, the Clydesdales, the one goes after the car, and then the Clydesdales all converge and stop the car. And then the puppy is then reunited with his Clydesdale, and they live happily ever after.
No, I always like that. When they do, when they do those sappy Clydesdale commercials, hey, look, I'm not going to front. I dig it. I thought it was pretty awesome. What you got for number two?
Number two, Radio Shack.
Yes.
It was the 80s called, and they want their store back.
First of all, my number one. Yeah. I'm just saying. That was fan-flippantastic.
It was fun. They had characters like Hulk Hogan, Chucky, the California Raisins, Alf, and they had the Back to the Future mobile taking all the Radio Shack stuff.
The DeLorean, yes.
And it's kind of Radio Shack making fun of themselves, saying that, their stores is kind of out of date. So I guess they're gonna.
Well, they're step your game up, right? You know, and hey, in all reality, that's the same thing that killed Circuit City and Best Buy. Or I shouldn't say killed Best Buy. It's what killed Circuit City is because they didn't update their stores quick enough. So hey, there's that. And what even had the obligatory appearance by what's his name, Frank Pozzarella, Eric Estrada from Chips in the 80s there too. If you're doing anything 80s, you pretty much have to have Eric Estrada in it. I love that Hulk was in it. I mean, the California Raisins drop, that for me, I was like, this is crazy. You know, I think I lost a good 2 or 3 seconds of the commercial because it went to California Raisins and I was laughing. Then I didn't see what happened next. Then it showed Alf and I'm like, forget it, done. This commercial wins. I don't know. I thought it was a jam. Anyways, number three.
Well, I was there were some of them that can take the spot, but I chose with Tim Tebow with his T-Mobile commercials about having no contract. Mm-hmm. And with his no contract, he's done so much. He delivered a baby, tackled Bigfoot, stand-up comic, saved puppies from a fire, stuntman, and all this stuff. It's Tim Tebow's the kind of guy that can make fun of himself. And I mean, the guy can't get in the NFL, and
for those who don't think that Tim Tebow doesn't have a sense of humor and can be the heel, look up Friar Tebow. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, that haircut thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just trying to tell you.
So the guy, I think he's going to be an announcer for, I believe, college football games.
Correct. No, he actually participated as an analyst for the national championship game. I don't think he was all that bad. And hell, when Lou Holtz is your competition, you ain't got to do that good in the first place. But I'd take him over Herb Street. I'd take him over Musburger. I'm just saying. Now I know he's a studio guy. He's not at the game, but you know what I'm saying.
All right. So any more of yours?
Well, and the one I wanted to point out there that you didn't have on the list is me. I liked the Stephen Colbert pistachio commercials. That was pretty solid. First of all, I'm a Stephen Colbert guy. I dug it. It was cool. And the first one was like, hey, you know, and pistachios are great. I'm great. It practically sells itself. It's not a big deal. And, you know, so he basically the first 30 seconds / $3 million was him talking about like how awesome he is and how awesome pistachios are. So just eat a pistachio and you'll be fine. Then the next one's like, so apparently there wasn't enough of a spike in sales. So we're going crazy. And he has like a green suit. And everything is green with pistachios all over the place. And at the end of the commercial, he kind of splits his head like a pistachio shell. And, like, it's like a pistachio in the middle. And it just – that was kind of creepy.
Clearly CGI.
Oh, wait, what? That was real, Weasel. Just like the Fantasy Files. No, but hey, first of all, I'm a Stephen Colbert guy. I mean, if you'll pardon the pun, he sells it. And I came away remembering it. That and Radio Shack were fantastic. The number three commercial for me, I could have gone several directions for this. A lot of people thought I'd be pissed off by the Morpheus commercial with Kia. It didn't piss me off. I'm just like, okay, you need a lot more than Morpheus to make me believe that Kia is a luxury car. Next question, okay? But just letting you know, advertisers, you failed on this one. You might want to go with Consumer Reports on this. I don't know.
I'll actually go with maybe an honorable mention, the one with Microsoft, and it's Steve Gleason.
Mm-hmm.
He's a former safety for the Saints.
Right.
And he has LC. What's the Lou Gehrig's disease?
Yes.
What letters? ALC.
ALS, I think. I don't remember.
It's also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and it was about technology where they have, like, they analyzed, like, this kid's legs. He has, like, hinged.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He has hinged legs for running, and there was a woman that heard for the first time, and they had Gleason, which is, this is one of your, not your, like, odd moments. It was, like, one of the moments that you can actually, you know, touch yourself. It's that.
That can touch where you would be touched, is what you mean.
Yeah, can be touched. And so he was with his son, and Gleason can, with his eyes, there's technology where he like looks at letters,
mm-hmm.
and with that he can spell out words and he can communicate to his son. So.
Yeah, that kind of tech is like what Stephen Hawking has, that kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's
absolutely.
Really cool. It's really cool.
No, and I mean, again, you're taking that real angle. I appreciate that, absolutely. I mean, you know, for me, it's a little bit of a cop-out, I'll admit, But the first funny commercial that came on in my mind was the Doritos commercial. Again, successful because I remembered it was for Doritos. And it was the time machine. And the guy gets into the cardboard box, and Jimmy, and the little boy, Jimmy, whatever his name is like, you got to put your Doritos in the slot. And he does. So he's outside, which, by the way, all the Doritos commercials seem to feature dogs eating their product. I wonder if they're going to get something from PETA. I'm just saying. So, you know, but so he and the dog are eating their Doritos, or his Doritos, I should say. And, like, he's taking a bullhorn and making noise and shaking the box with his foot. Just in time for an old guy to come out, and then he mistakes the little boy for the old guy, and it's just, ah! And so, I don't know. Anyways, successful advertising all the way around, because I haven't heard a single one where we didn't remember the product being advertised. But that being said, there's a lot of awful commercials. Like, I still don't understand, for one, what Bob Dylan has to do with selling Ford. And, of course, SodaStream gets an honorable mention just because they had Scarlett Johansson in the commercial.
Well, they were like, you know, oh, we're going to take it farther. And it was like,
well, they tried to, but they got pulled at the last minute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, no. Like, what she was going to say, something about, like, look out, Coke and Pepsi or something like that. And the NFL intervened, so to speak. So, which, look, and I talked about this this past Wednesday on the OT with Andrew G on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. And really, it's good that that happened, because now that that commercial was intervened, it had buzz going into the game. More free advertising, of course, since she spent $3 million free. Well, I mean, it's kind of like overtime in a basketball game. You know, oh, look, 10 more minutes of free basketball. No, just bonus. Whatever, you see where I'm going.
I got you.
I don't know. It's kind of like buying a Super Bowl ticket that goes into overtime. I mean, not that this one did. But, you know, oh, look, I spent $8,000 for a nosebleed seat. I get free 15 minutes or sudden death football. No. Anyways. So, okay. Weasel, worst commercial.
All right, I got to say, number one was the 2014 Ford Fusion Hybrid. Double the fuel economy of the average car. It was, you know, double the length of a commercial. Starring Rob Riggle and James Franco. It was like, they're all about making history. And the thing is that it was really annoying. And I couldn't wait for it to be over. And just when you thought it was over, another commercial came on. And that was the one with Franco. And it's like, it was just pretty stupid to me. I didn't like it.
Yeah, you know, if someone hasn't learned by now, I mean, look, James Franco being the Green Goblin is basically all I got, okay? If y'all haven't figured out that him and Seth Rogen are a bad idea, don't do it. Rob Riggle, you're on notice, sir. I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
And people have actually compared me to him before, and I'm like, don't do that. I mean, it's because he's big. That's what, okay, you know, I'm big, he's big, so automatically we got to be the same. It's like, oh, look, they're big. They all look alike. Wait. Probably a bad idea to go that direction. But anyways.
Number two was the Maserati. It was the commercial had an attempt to be a inspirational one to the common man, the person, you know, rising up. The problem with that is that a common man cannot afford
a common man can't fit in a damn Maserati.
I think they're what, they start like what, 70 grand or something?
Oh yeah, you're better than me on that, yeah.
So yeah, that was a little bit no.
How about no? I'm with you, dude.
And my last one was WeatherTech. It's a commercial about how the company is proud to have American factories, American workers, and American raw materials, which is great.
Yeah, no.
And then the thing is, I don't know what they make. It's like, I was like, that's good.
That's a good point. And well, on top of that, like, the opening was kind of negative too, right? It shows all these corporate people, you can't do American factories. You just can't do that. It's too expensive. You can't have American workers. You just can't do that. It's too expensive. I'm like, okay. There was a missed opportunity there. That commercial could have been hilarious, because bad things happening to executives in Super Bowl commercials historically kicks ass. Weasel, Terry Tate, office linebacker.
Classic.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
I got you.
Okay.
Got you.
Reebok. Beautiful. That's over a decade old, Weasel. I still remember every single second of it. That's a long distance call, Doug. I'm just saying. And if you don't know it, look up Terry Tate office linebacker. You'll thank me later.
Awesome.
Actually, you should thank me now.
There's a lot of the different episodes, the different commercials.
That's right.
For him,
that's right.
They are pretty.
They're
pretty
all
funny.
Pretty badass. Heck, exactly. I even think he did one even for the against the Sarah Palin campaign. It was kind of silly, but yep. I don't know, dude. I know that you come from a Republican household, Weasel. I don't care what side you lean. It's still a funny commercial. I'm just saying.
I got you.
I'm just saying. At any rate, don't judge Weasel. He's not a racist. He's just Republican. Just kidding. Anyways. So speaking of things that were very interesting, the halftime show. Now, keep in mind, folks, in the past, what have we gone? We've kind of gone the Fogey route lately, right?
Oh, yeah.
You got what? Bruce Springsteen, The Who, Prince, that era of artists.
Yeah,
then they
yeah.
went. Then they went from Fogey to Fergie when, you know, she was on with the Black Eyed Peas. I think that was 2 years ago. Then this past year, they had Madonna, which, hey, for a 50-year-old with a sprained ankle, she danced well. I can't front on that. They had Beyonce. Oh, actually, Beyonce was last year, right? Yeah, Beyonce was last year.
Yes.
I wasn't feeling that, but then again, that's also the same chick that sings the song that annoys the ever-loving hell out of me. Seriously, whoever thought Single Ladies was a good idea as a song? Not my friend. Not
Kanye
my friend.
West likes that song. He does.
That's great. That's great.
That was his reason for his outburst on that music awards. But moving on.
Oh, well, no, he didn't like the song, just the music video. Right? About time!
Yeah, music video.
Because Taylor Swift. Anyways, no, but excellent meme drop, by the way. Glad you remembered it was Kanye this time.
Yeah.
No, but you failed as my hip-hop analyst before, but you're back in the fold. I like it. No, but so this year they had Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which, as combinations go, gotta be honest, wouldn't have thought of putting them together. Actually, when you think about it, it's like if he was made something different than Bruno Mars. Well, actually, Bruno Mars, if it's kind of like candy, like a Mars bar with Red Hot Chili Peppers, it's kind of like that recipe would sound. Not a combination you instantly think of, but I thought it was still a pretty decent show, right? He comes out, does his, you know, two current songs, most current songs, you know, I don't know the name of them because I don't follow Bruno Mars like that. If I was to pick anything, it'd be the stuff on his older CD, I guess. Hey, Grenade was the jam. Don't you dare judge me.
It's a good song.
I'm saying, you know, you've karaoke'd Bruno Mars before you start judging me.
Yep.
I'm just saying. Whatever.
You know, it's because you're amazing, just the way you are.
Bam! Why, thank you, Weasel. I'm touched. That's fantastic. No. That was beautiful. See, I'm glad you did something with that. That was going to be awkward otherwise, because we're talking about Bruno Mars and we're two 30-year-old men. And yeah, anyways. So, but then more to our demographic comes out. Like, I like how the way they transition it. He does a version of a Red Hot Chili Pepper song. Gave it away, man. And it's subpar. Bruno Mars is not going to be able to pull off Black Eyed Peas with his band. And then it transitions to the Black Eyed Peas, Red Hot Chili Peppers. All this food, I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
Red Hot Chili Peppers. And they transitioned. It was. I thought it was solid. I liked it a lot. And then they did the whole, what was it, tribute with the soldiers abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And going into Just the Way You Are. I don't know. Weasel, thoughts?
I thought, Bruno Mars, he's a great performer. That the halftime show was enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And he's the kind of artist that if you just hear a song, you don't know who it is. It's his voice is like so unique, and his songs they're kind of like it can be universally liked.
Right.
Because it's not like usually it's not just one genre. So I thought the halftime show was great. You know, the Chili Peppers, you know, that was cool having them in there.
Yep.
And I haven't heard much bad things about it.
I haven't heard any bad feedback myself. I mean, you know, I listen to sports radio throughout the day, and you know, heck, even the environment I watch the game in, and this is no offense to Chris, but I watch it at his house with his parents, his family, and my parents will go there too. Although my mom didn't because she had theater tickets, which I mean, she's a chick, so that's okay. But because stereotypes, no, but. I mean, my mom's not a football fan, so that's okay. She had theater tickets, whatever. My wife was with me, and, you know, whatever, because she's cool. You know, Not just because she's having my kid either. I'm tangenting. Anyway, so, but what I thought I noticed is, like, you know, so they made the obligatory jokes that anybody at that house who's watching the Super Bowl would make, and then it would went away quickly. Like, with Beyonce, everyone kept talking smack because the show sucked. I'm sorry. This show was pretty decent. And then the Chili Peppers come out, and then they have nothing to bitch about. And then, you know, the tribute thing. If you hate on that, you're wrong. And then on top of that, though, Weasel, Chris's mom, who's, like, in her 60s, was even like, I love Bruno Mars. He's fantastic. Don't ask me to imitate her. There's no way I can do it. But so it appeals to, like, the youth and to, like, 60-year-old people.
Yep.
That's what they're looking for in the Super Bowl. And to get something like that that's good, extremely difficult. And I think this is the best job they've done in a while. I think since, well, I mean, you know, to me, I thought Springsteen was a decent show. There were some people hating on that because some people didn't know who Springsteen were. Well, that's a them problem. But, yeah, you know, I thought this was a solid show all the way around. Good times. Right? There you go. Although, I'll say, pop quiz, Weasel. An opera singer for the national anthem.
At first, I was kind of a little bit shaky on it because it's like, is it going to be like a 5-minute national anthem type thing? But when she was singing, I was like, okay. I mean, it's you know, she's got, you know, great voice, and
oh, yeah.
It was, you know, nothing was really changed as in like creative license for like lengths of notes or anything like that. It flowed, and so first hearing about it, it's weird, but when you actually see it, I thought it was nicely done.
Okay, and overall, I liked it too. Let me rephrase. The performer was fantastic and all that stuff, very talented. I don't think it's the right feel for the national anthem, but we're kind of changing the discussion. Okay, but yeah, so you went with it. I can't front on that. All right. So anyways, that'll conclude our non-football section of the football, which would probably seem more pleasant to some people who aren't, to people who are Broncos fans. Anyways, the game itself, Broncos, Seahawks, Weasel.
All right, so let's just gonna go through the game, just you know, as and stop on some big points in the game that made some differences. So to start off, I'm just gonna talk a little about crowd noise. Now,
crowd noise.
Seattle, their stadium, they have they're known as one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL.
Known as they're in this little rag you may have heard of called the Guinness Book of World Records.
Number two, the Chiefs beat them.
Actually, no, they took it back.
They took it back.
They took it back.
Oh, that's nice. So, anyways, so John Fox was like, I was at two Super Bowls before, and I don't think the crowd was that bad. So, the team actually practiced with the volume down on like the crowd noise.
Okay, first of all, duh.
Yeah. So I think it was like by a factor of five where they lowered the volume. So they get into the game, and the Seahawks, you know, make a brash move. They, on the coin toss, they win, and they say, we're going to kick it off. They defer over. So on the kickoff, it was just they get the ball at the 14-yard line.
Trending Holiday shouldn't have even taken it out of the end zone, but whatever.
Yeah. So first play of the game, you got the center, Ramirez, for the
Manny Bronco. Ramirez, not to be confused with Big Poppy.
Manny Ramirez. Yeah. He, I don't know whose fault it was, but you have Peyton Manning. It looked like he wanted to do a kind of his little audible thing going. Mm-hmm. Like, check this guy, check this, you know, maybe change something up. And the ball suddenly snapped. You see Peyton's face go, what?
You could tell he definitely wasn't ready for it.
And the ball just goes in the end zone, and then you have Sean Marino jump on it. And at least it was only 2 points, as in Seattle could have recovered it.
Well, 2 points and a relinquished possession to open the game.
So, yeah, right off the bat, that didn't look good at all, and I think the crowd got to him. So,
well, that's interesting. See, the crowd got to him, maybe. Well,
the thing was is that the guy was, the center was, looked like he was, on the snaps, he was looking straight forward. So it must have been on, like, a voice command. That's right. What I'm thinking, and maybe he didn't hear it.
So Manning says something, it's like the snap is on Papa, and he says Omaha, and then you know, well, I mean, because he would say Papa, because, you know, he owns Papa John's all over Colorado. I don't know, but yeah, Yeah.
So pretty much that was a weird way of starting the game.
By the way, Weasel, last time the opening drive of a Super Bowl had a safety in it based on a deferred coin toss. That's right. Patriots, Giants, the second version.
Interesting.
Boom!
All right.
By the way, also, fastest score in Super Bowl history, 12 seconds into the game, 2 points on the board for the Seattle Seahawks. Kind of embarrassing.
So pretty much the Seahawks, after the safety, they get the ball back, and they started at the 36-yard line. The highlight of that drive was actually a guy, Percy Harvin.
Percy Harvin?
Yes.
You mean the guy who couldn't play the previous playoff game because he was hurt?
Yeah, there's a little thing with Percy Harvin. I'll cover it a little bit later.
More on that later.
Yeah. But the guy made a 30-yard run off an end around, which was a pretty awesome play.
And, you know, you got to think that through. They're going to expect Marshawn Lynch to attack. Oh, psych. I gotta tell you, overall, throughout the game, I know that he has 2 carries for 45 yards or something like that, does Percy Harvin, and he's the top runner for the Seahawks in the game. I can't front on this, man. I thought that was really cool the way they used him.
Exactly. So he had some runs and passes. Russell Wilson, he was cool and calm and collected. And they stopped at the Denver 13, and they had to go for a field goal. They win it. They got it. And 5-0. Very unusual score.
Yeah, to say the least. My dad and I were trying to figure out if that had happened before in Super Bowl history.
Right. Next drive, Broncos. Oh, you got first down, second down, third down, and fourth down. Let's see. Well, the Broncos in this drive was 3-and-out.
Yeah,
now,
pretty useless.
One thing to note, though, was that the 2nd-and-7 at the 38. Demaryius Thomas, he was a... I think it was like a they were talking, presser was talking about how the Seahawks are very aggressive and about the physicality of them.
Yes.
And so Thomas said that it didn't bother him because he likes getting hit. Well,
about that.
The Chancellor of
Cam Chancellor.
Cam Chancellor took that to heart. And he's like, I'm going to remember that.
Okay.
So on a slant route for a measly 2 yards. Chancellor just rocked a...
Whap! How's your mama doing?
Thomas, he just knocked him the bleep off.
Bleep out.
And so
that too. Well, they
kind
both
of,
work.
Kind of set a tone for their defense.
Yeah.
Like, they're not scared of him.
And you know, I know you're kind of taking it very detailed now. We'll get more generalized as we go on. But I'm glad that you mentioned that there. The way you put it, it's setting a tone. Throughout the game, there was a lot of tough tackling. There was a lot of big hits. And I got to tell you, Weasel, all the attention is focused on the secondary. Hell, I'm guilty of it to an extent myself, although I did mention the Seattle Seahawks defensive front in the matchup mania going into the Super Bowl. Got to tell you, bro, I nailed it head on in the first graph when I said the O-line must stop the defensive front of the Seahawks because, well, we saw the score. We'll get more into it as we go, sure. But just very aggressive defense, secondary, up front, all the way around. On it, I cannot front.
Yep. So 8:31, Seahawks get the ball, and it's highlighted by a 37-yard catch by Baldwin. Now,
Doug Baldwin.
Doug Baldwin. I mean, he made some plays, and that led to a field goal. So 8-0, weird score.
Now, let me get a point here. At this point, I'm really thinking that Denver's defense is doing a pretty decent job, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the safety, okay, whatever. They held that to a field goal. They hold the Seahawks again to a field goal after there was some trickery, the Percy Harvin and around. Well, that was the previous drive. But, you know, they gave up a big play or two. I'm not going to front. I mean, look, at the end of the day, Doug Baldwin led among Seattle Seahawks receivers of 66 yards, featuring that 37-yard catch that you mentioned, right? There's a big play there that they gave up. So that you figured that was going to happen, you know, but still holding them to a field goal, even despite their secondary. The Denver defense missing 5 starters kept the Seahawks at 2-4 in the red zone.
Yep.
I'm just saying. Continue.
So next drive on a 3rd-and-7 at the 23-yard line, Manning, he drops back, and he had a pass intercepted by Chancellor.
By Cam Chancellor, yes.
There was something about Thomas that...
Well, yeah, and see, here's the thing. I've already heard the pundits talk about this. And it's on ESPN that they're talking about it. I'm like, well, okay, that's my first mistake, listening to ESPN in the morning. But, hey, whatever. Oh, well, Manning overthrew. No, Manning didn't overthrow anything. Julius Thomas in this Super Bowl on that play looked like Randy Moss last year on a play in last year's Super Bowl. Weasley, you know what I'm getting at? Quitting on the route.
Ooh.
But Colin Kaepernick got drilled and annihilated. Oh, he threw the only pick in Super Bowl history for 49ers. Ah, and it was all Randy Moss's fault. It's interesting I mentioned a veteran there to a rookie making the same mistake. Now, Weasel, let me ask you this question. Peyton Manning, what's he known for?
get some people mad here choking? No,
no, not even that.
I think he's known for his command of an offense, his knowledge of the game, and his...
As far as pregame goes.
Pregame?
Off the field. What's he known for?
Well, his, I guess, his commercials and...
You mean preparation for the game?
Yeah, I would say so.
Being one of the hardest working quarterbacks before the game?
Yeah.
So let me get this straight. The guy busts it preparing for games. Knows things left, right, outwards. Strategic genius. Could probably lead as a general the invasion of Normandy, right? I mean, in football terms. Yet I'm supposed to believe he overthrew this ball. It wasn't Julius Thomas cutting it off, right? Because he's heading. You see when you watch the replay, he's heading that direction already, and he makes a little sidestep and changes his direction. The ball goes where he would have been, but it's Peyton Manning's fault. Yeah. Hey guys, stop with the Manning hate. Just stop it. No, stop it. Stop it. Anyways, Weasel, continue.
So, yeah. So he got intercepted, and they gave the Seahawks the ball back. You know, late in the first quarter. So the next drive, it's the Seahawks. They drive all the way to the Denver 5-yard line. Now, Russell Wilson threw a pass to the back of the end zone to Golden Tate.
Mm-hmm.
The defender, Carter, he like forgot.
The linebacker.
The linebacker. Yeah, I think this was the one where
Nathaniel Carter,
He forgot to turn around.
Oh, okay. No, you mean the DB then. Yeah. This isn't the same play. Excuse me. You're talking about the pass interference, right?
Where he didn't even look around at the quarterback.
He was grabbing the receiver. He was face guarding. The only thing he forgot to do was buy dinner for the molestation in question. Yeah, that's a PI in the end zone.
So that was a third down turn to a first down and at the 1-yard line. Two tries for Lynch, and the second he made it, touchdown.
Give him some Skittles. He was in beast mode, yada, yada, yada.
So, that's going into the second, the early second quarter.
Okay, so I think that's a good place to stop real quick for a break. You're listening to the Student of the Game on the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game week by week to the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com. And read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGU, football talk, just the way you like it.
And of course, you are still here with the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, with Stephen Weasel Hurley, bringing you football talk, just the way you like it here on the NGN. And we're still talking Super Bowl, and the breakdowns had just begun. 15-0 the score at this point here. We're going into the second quarter here. Weasel, pick us up from the touchdown where Marshawn Lynch went all beast mode. Of course, let's be honest. On the day, Marshawn Lynch, not as impressive as I thought he'd be. Terrence Knight and company up front did a good job of stopping him up the gut. 15 carries for 39 yards was Marshawn Lynch's day. He also had an 18-yard run, so that really kind of makes it 14 for 21 for the rest of his carries. Not an impressive day overall. You got to give the defense credit for stopping that much because, I mean, hey, they were daring Russell Wilson to beat them. Let me ask you this question before we move on, Weasel.
Mm-hmm.
18 for 25, 206 with two touchdowns. Impressive?
For Russell Wilson's stats?
Yeah.
I think so. He's a second-year guy.
I think it's good. But, well, okay, you say he's a second-year guy, and I know you're right. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Russell Wilson's bad. But this is a guy who was getting talks where he should be MVP, and he's so wonderful. I'm like,
Well,
I don't know.
He's
and also a lot of favorable field position
too.
He's
the kind of quarterback where I think it showed this game that he doesn't kill your team with
mistakes,
with turnovers or mistakes.
Yeah.
He does his job with. I mean, he could run for first downs,
which he did. What's he got here? He's got 3 runs for 26 yards, so that's not terrible.
And he could make the. He makes pinpoint passes too. He can.
He's pretty accurate. Yeah.
When it's like third down or so, mm-hmm. he can make a play. So, I mean, him being MVP, I wouldn't really disagree with that too much.
We'll get into the MVP talk later, but 7 for 12 on third down were the Seahawks, by
the
way. So
that's
good, actually. That's pretty damn solid. I agree. So, anyways, continue.
All right. So, early in the second, you got the Broncos getting the ball, and they have a pretty long drive. I think Peyton Manning is actually converting third downs now. So, there were in this drive, there were four third down conversions.
Quick note here. First down was made at this point. Woot. 10.5 minutes-ish into the second quarter. Or, excuse me, 10.5 minutes left in the second quarter, which means they went almost 20 minutes into the game. Without a first down. A third of the game.
Exactly. So
that's not very good.
For their fifth third down, they were facing a 3rd and 13 at the Seattle 35-yard line with 3:36 remaining. You got Peyton Manning dropping back to pass. So one thing about Manning this season is that he doesn't get too much pressure on him. His offensive line kind of holds up. And
right.
He... you know, can make quick throws and everything. And
less than 2.5 seconds per release he's been known for on average. And also that offensive line, even without their starting left tackle, who they lost early in the year, held the Kansas City Chiefs to 0 sacks, a front that features the following Pro Bowlers: Dontari Poe at defensive tackle and linebackers Tom Bahali, Derek Jackson, and Justin Houston. 0 sacks allowed. It looked like there'd be hope, but...
Well... Well, what happened was...
I think it's appropriate in this game to use what happened was. I agree.
I think so, too. So... So, 3rd and 13, 35-yard line. Peyton Manning drops back, and there is a defensive end, Cliff Averill, who connected with Peyton Manning's arm on a throw.
Yes.
So
there was a connection on this pass.
So it was clearly the ball wasn't going where Peyton wanted it to go.
Yes.
So the ball went up in the air, and you have some guy, I think you heard him after the game, Malcolm Smith.
Linebacker, yeah? Malcolm Smith. Yes, that name's familiar.
Yeah, I think he did something.
Well, after which game? Do you mean after the conference championship Sunday game where he actually caught the interception ended the game? Oh, you didn't mean that one.
Oh.
More on that later.
Yeah. Well, this one, it's Malcolm Smith. He was guarding, I believe it was maybe like Demaryius Thomas or I forgot who he was guarding, but the ball, Manning's arm got hit. And so as he threw it, it was like lobbed up in the air, and Malcolm Smith went for it. He
broke on the ball pretty sharply.
He broke
on the ball,
and he took the initiative, and I don't know if the Broncos receiver, I don't think he was...
He knew what was happening.
It was like,
whatever. My God, what? Huh? Oh, yeah.
So, got to give Malcolm Smith credit, mm-hmm. not only for the interception, but also for running it back 69.
Oh, right.
69 yards for the touchdown.
So, wait. He went 69 yards, then he scored. Oh, right.
So, you got a 16-play drive for the Broncos that ends in an interception return for a touchdown.
Wah, wah.
Not good.
You know, and let's keep it this way. So at this point, we end up with 22-0. 9 of the points defensive in nature.
Yep. So
I'm just saying.
3:21, Broncos get the ball back. And Manning, you know, he does his thing. He brings the Seahawks all the way down to...
Oh, wait.
He brings the Broncos...
It's 23-0, but my math is crappy.
It's 22.
Sorry. It was 22?
22-0.
Okay, I'm right. Good.
And he...
yes!
So he started at Denver 33, converts about, I think, 3 or 4 first downs,
mm-hmm.
and it comes to a 4th and 2 at the Seattle 19-yard line. You're down 22-0. What do you do? You got a guy, Matthew Prater, who's... he's pretty established.
UCF
with
product.
Yeah. Extra points, you know, for those people from UCF, you know.
not his strong suit.
Not his strong suit, but field goals, the guy's pretty solid.
NFL record holder, 64-yard field goal.
Yep. And this one would have been a, let's see, about 35-yard field goal.
I think he can handle that.
Yeah. Now, so instead of being put on the board at 22-3, Broncos go for it.
Okay, so it's a 35-yard field goal versus a 4th-and-2.
4th-and-2, yeah.
What do you do?
So Manning, incomplete pass to Thomas, Demetrius Thomas.
Oh, we can make this.
It's a trap.
So, personally, I thought they should take the points on the board.
Yeah.
You're getting shut out. Nothing's there. It's something.
Well, even more open than that, let's think it through. Let's go with what happened. And, like, first of all, this isn't me showing hindsight, Weasel, as somebody who's been on this show, who's a witness to it. And for people who are actually nerdy enough to look through recordings and find where I've said this, always take the point. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it might. So you take the points here. You at least stop momentum of the Seahawks. They know that a shutout is off the table. They know that you aren't quite dead yet. 19 points is a surmountable lead when you happen to have Peyton Manning. Instead, in getting this stop, all you've done is feed the bloodlust of this defense into continuing to crush you, to slap you, to beat the ever-loving expletive deleted out of you.
Exactly. So Seahawks got the ball back with 101. You know, they didn't take any risks. They just, two plays. And they take it into halftime. So instead of going in there 22-3, they didn't take the points.
So 22-zip. Instead of being the orange crush, the Broncos are being orange crushed.
Yes.
Because they wore their orange jerseys, and their record in orange jerseys is really bad.
Right. So we got...
Which is actually kind of backwards, because when they have the blues, they're actually happy because they won with John Elway when they have the blues. The blue uniforms.
All right. So start of the third quarter. I'm thinking there's something happened where this guy, Percy Harvin.
Oh, who's that?
Yeah, well, that's what Seattle Seahawks have been saying all season. But
oh, that's so mean.
Hey, well, I'm going to give some...
Because Vikings fan is bitter.
Give some... No,
I'm talking smack. You're good. I know you're not.
All right, so Percy Harvin, a little bit about him. He was the kickoff returner for the Seahawks, and he was traded for 3 draft picks, one of which was a first-round draft pick.
Yes, it was.
Just this past year.
That's correct.
He signed a 6-year, $67 million contract, $12 million signing bonus. Now, he was limited to playing 40 snaps all season, including the playoffs.
Let me ask you real quick, and if you don't know, just say you don't know, Weasel. Which first-round pick for the Vikings did he represent? Xavier Rhodes, Sharif Floyd, or Cordarrelle Patterson?
It was, I think it was the second pick of the
Sharif Floyd. Okay.
No, Rhodes.
It was Rhodes, okay.
It was Rhodes, yeah. So, let's see. So, he had a pretty huge contract. He had a hip injury, and in the playoffs, he had a concussion. So
right.
He couldn't play like the conference game.
So let's get a little bit of context on that. He hurts himself in the preseason. He's doesn't even show up except for one play against the Vikings where he runs a 51-yard punt return back. Doesn't play again until the Saints game, which is the Seahawks' first playoff game, round 2, because the Saints had to play in the wild card to get there. He gets knocked out of the Saints game, doesn't play a conference championship Sunday, and returns to the Super Bowl, has already made an end-around play, made his presence felt, but he wasn't done there.
He showed some speed on the end-around. And so the Broncos, you know, maybe they can get, you know, pumped up. You know, going into the second half, we could do this.
We're going to go get a stop, and we're going to be in this game. It's going to be 22-7. It'll be great.
Exactly. So the Seahawks, they got the ball off the kickoff. The kickoff was actually a high kickoff. And it was, I think it was, it fielded at the, it hit the ground at the 13-yard line.
Now, it was kind of squibbed, right? I mean, you know.
Somewhat, yeah. But it was intended to, you know, hit the 13-yard line and have
kind of prevent a return. A little confusion, you know.
Yeah, well, so that Percy Harvin would get tackled immediately at the, if he grabbed the ball.
Certainly, let the special teams get under it, right.
Yeah. It didn't work that way for them.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Well, so,
what happened?
Percy grabs it at the 13-yard line. He, just takes off. The guy's got speed, and he even broke some tackles.
A few good blocks.
And got some blocks, and he
juked the kicker.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Got it. Hey, the kicker can ruin a return anytime.
It has happened before.
Exactly.
See Martin Grammatica.
Yep.
Trying to tell you.
So he ran it back 87 yards for a touchdown. Now,
that's a lot.
So, I mean, the guy, you know, it's tough being, I mean, it's tough getting a huge contract. Not really, but... Everyone was like, a lot of people doubted him, and he came back and he produced. So good for him.
Well, right. I mean, let's put it this way. Calling it produced for his contract, he faced a lot of injury, but he still made his presence felt in this particular game. And you know, I'll ask you this, Weasel, and you can tell me what you think about it, too. That ball was bobbled a little bit when it came down. And I kind of felt like that prompted the special teams unit to get undisciplined and just attack. They leave their lanes. Harvin recovers the ball, zips down the field. Mm-hmm. And then everybody who's a Gator fan starts going ape because Harvin scores a touchdown at the Super Bowl.
Yep, yep. So good for him, you know.
So at that point, I think we're going to pretty much call the game out of hand for the Broncos, right?
Yeah, and, you know, pretty much when the Broncos are trying, you know, to make a, you know, at least get some points on the board. It that didn't happen until the third quarter.
The last play of the third quarter. They're one play away from not scoring in this football game until the fourth quarter.
So, yeah, the game.
First shutout in Super Bowl history, it would have been.
Yes, so.
It would have been.
So, yeah, I mean, you have other highlights. Like, so you got the Harbin play. You have the Demetrius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas, in the mid third quarter, he got a pass, was running, I think, about 23 yards, and a good defensive player for the Seahawks punched at the football. It was actually a good play, and Seattle, they recovered it, and that was one of four turnovers for Seattle. That led to a Seahawks touchdown, 36 zip or so, a little bit out of reach. And the rest of the game just was like,
because, you know, yeah. So, I mean, at that point, it was a little nutty. A dubious fact in the game, Demaryius Thomas, I believe, is the highest number of receptions by a single player in the
Super
Bowl.
He did
have
13 receptions.
Correct. 100 and, I'm going to say, 18 yards, was it? I got it here in front of me. Let me just look right quick. He had 118 yards. Bam!
With a touchdown, yeah.
With a touchdown, right. And the only moment there. So, you mentioned the crowd noise in preparation, Weasel. It's the Super Bowl. John Fox, I'm a little disappointed in you. You're the guy that got Tim Tebow to win a damn playoff game, and you think it's a good idea to ever practice for a postseason game with a lower noise value. Are you stupid?
I think he said something along the line. I can't find the quote right now, but he said something. We just, you know, we practiced what we thought would happen, and it was like,
you assumed it would be cold. They assumed it would be cold.
Pretty much.
The weather said, kiss my butt, and they assumed it would be cold. Hey, no! You know what? It's the Super Bowl. It'll be cold, and people will still show up. You know what you know what I think you do, Weasel? You find the tape of the Seahawks crowd, and you loop it. I don't care if you're practicing for the frickin' Super Bowl or a preseason game in Poughkeepsie, Illinois, if that even exists. You have that biatch going, and you'll be ready for anything noise-wise. And it's not even a question, because if you don't need it for your upcoming game, you'll need it at some point in the season. That is a coaching fail, period, exclamation point, binds around it, highlighted neon lit. You get the point.
Yeah, the one thing that Seattle head coach Pete Carroll said, it was kind of interesting. It's like one thing about this, all the games during the season, he says, play like it's your, this is your championship game. So every week you're playing like, you know, the Super Bowl. You're playing the Super Bowl. Doing that, if you have that mentality, which not only he said that, players have been saying that. So, you know, the players are buying into it. And once they got to the Super Bowl, none of those guys were, I think, zip played in the Super Bowl before. None.
That's accurate.
And it, for the Seahawks offensive defense, it didn't look like it was overwhelming. They just flat out dominated on both sides of the football. So it was messed up by the Broncos, but Seahawks did dominate. They deserved the win.
You know, absolutely. And anyone who's going to blame Peyton Manning for this is an idiot. Okay. Weasel, you watched that game. You saw the way that pocket collapsed. I'm going to list for you the names of quarterbacks. You tell me if they would have done any better than Peyton Manning did in that situation. Starting with Aaron Rodgers.
No, well, maybe he could. Rodgers could incorporate his running into it. Manning just stays in there in the pocket.
Ryan Tannehill.
Nah.
Alex Smith.
No.
Colin Kaepernick. Okay, yeah, because it happened last week.
Pretty much.
Colin Kaepernick. Joe Montana.
I think Joe would be okay.
No, I think he'd be screwed too. I'm just saying. Oh. But the point is, that front did a fantastic job. And that's the reason why, we'll go ahead and say it now, the Super Bowl MVP was one Malcolm Smith, the linebacker in question. Weasel, I'm going to ask you, decent pick?
Yeah. The guy had 10 tackles, 6 solo, 2 passes defended, 1 fumble recovery, and the interception return for a touchdown. And after this game was a game of defense. And Manning, if you look at the scoreboard and you have a game where Manning scores, his team scores 8 points, an MVP, of course, has got to be on the defense.
Hey, can we stop talking in terms of one person here? No offense, Weasel. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Are you aware of how many points the Broncos scored during the regular season?
A lot.
606. 606 points in the regular season, setting an NFL record. 8 points in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
8 points in the Super Bowl. In the regular season, the lowest number of points scored was, do you know that?
What was it, 20s or something?
Technically, the answer is yes. It's in the 20s. Against the Chargers, they scored 20 points. Lowest in the season. 8 points in the Super Bowl.
And the temperature-wise, people in the past said it was Manning doesn't play well in the cold and stuff like that.
Right.
This game was supposed to, people were talking snowing. It was going to be like freezing. On the field, 49 degrees.
Right, and as the forecast was being released closer to the Super Bowl, like at the beginning of the week, it was talking about ice pellets. But towards the actual game itself, close to the Super Bowl later in the week leading up to, it had it going, it was going to be a pretty mild day. And that it was. And Weasel, I got to tell you, man, I'm looking at the player line here. First of all, Russell Wilson should not be the MVP. Whoever, and I'm stoked. The one good thing about watching this game is it proved to me that the right guy got the MVP. I mean, you know, there's some other standouts who are performers. Cam Chancellor, he had 9 tackles on the day as a safety and a pick. Who else we got here? We have a number of guys with 9 or 10 tackles. The other linebacker, Bobby Wagner. The difference here, my friend, Malcolm Smith touched the ball twice as a defender and scored with one of them.
Yep.
You can't, dude. That's a fantastic performance, to say the least. I know. I'm preaching the obvious here. Hell, Peyton Manning getting sacked at all is an accomplishment, which they managed to do. They sacked him. Granted, it was only one time, but you could argue they did more valuable than sacking him. They caused him to throw interceptions.
If you watch highlights for the game and stuff, it's he got sacked once, you know, but the thing was, is he was being hurried and knocked down and stuff like that. It's because they got in his face, and that's the way you beat Manning, is by getting in his face. And all those other games, I mean, during the regular season, he was, you know, his jersey was pretty clean. But this game, I mean, they were just all up in his face.
Oh, we got popped a number of times.
And the one interception return for a touchdown was Averill hitting his arm as he threw.
Damn right.
Which clearly, you know, changed the trajectory of the ball, and the guy who returned it for a touchdown, so props to the defensive line.
I did not hear enough about Bruce Irvin, Cliff Averill, and Michael Bennett during the season for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
It's because everyone's talking about Richard Sherman and his loud mouth.
The Legion of Boom.
Yeah, correct. And look, I'm, there ain't a question. The L-O-B! The L-O-B is the top secondary in the league. Look, I know I've had my things to say about Sherman's outburst and some of his antics, even in the past, not just after Conference Championship Sunday. But you've never heard me knock his talent, and that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He's a talented dude. If I saw him on the street, hey, you're a talented dude. I just don't like the way you celebrate sometimes. Muhammad Ali, you are not. I'm just saying. So, anyways, there's that. But, you know, I liked that you mentioned the Peyton Manning aspect. With a number between 1 and 10, 1 being Albert Einstein genius and 10 being complete moron who has suffered some sort of lobotomy like a character in Planet of the Apes, how stupid are you to blame Peyton Manning for the Broncos' loss? I know that's kind of random, but
I'd put it halfway.
You put it at 5?
I'd put it at 5.
You think they're only half stupid? Well, walk me through that.
Well, the thing is that for the defense, the guy with the ball is the general. He called
on offense,
yeah,
right?
Whatever. So
whatever.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
The dude with the guy's trying to score. Giggity.
He tells people where to go, and he's one of the most like observant guys in the NFL with blitzes, reading, and all that good stuff. But a lot of times he just didn't make the throws. The Seattle defense did play amazingly, and so I think. And they did have 4 turnovers. I think Manning had, I believe he had 3 of them. So
that's correct.
And so he had that. Manning did have something to do with it. 100% though, no, it's not 100% Manning.
All that Manning had to do with it was the ball had to happen to have the misfortune of being starting in his hands. Okay, that's where Manning is the victim here. You say 5, I say 7.5. Okay, not quite an 8. Because to be honest, you actually have to watch a bit of the film to really see it. And far be it from me, I guess, to expect pundits in the lamestream sports media to do so. But, if you got a defense this great, Weasel, and Julius Thomas changes a route and doesn't run the route complete like he's supposed to, that's going to matter.
Yeah.
If you got a guy who throws the ball and releases amongst the quickest in the NFL, but the receivers aren't open short because of the quote-unquote physical and sometimes borderline illegal nature of the Legion of Boom up front. And then, oh, by the way, your O-line is probably having their single toughest day. I'm not going to say worst day, but toughest day they've faced any point in anything connected to the 2013 season, because I know it's 2014, but that's still the 2013 champion, right? You can't blame Peyton Manning here. Here's the thing about it. You heard all the discussion, just like I have, about the Manning legacy and all this other stuff. What should happen is, if you were already down on Peyton Manning because he's a choke artist, you had no reason to change your mind. If you didn't think he was a choke artist, you have no reason to change your mind, right? I mean, you see where I'm coming from there? So, I don't know. People are already talking about his legacy. Obviously, it would have been a lot better if he'd won. The thing that worries me is morons out there are going to make this about him losing it and not him getting there and just bumping into a superior force.
I think the main thing about the Peyton Manning thing is that, was it all his fault? No. Was it partially his fault? Yes.
Put a percentage on it.
I'd say about 33% Peyton's fault.
I'd have said 25.
So
I'd have said 25.
Because
you could argue he could have adjusted for Thomas. I don't know. He made a break pretty late in the route. I can't tell. I don't know. Anyway, so with that, we'll go ahead and call it this week. This has been the final. It's so sad, Weasel. I mean, what the hell am I going to do?
I know, right?
Oh, yeah, right. The daughter thing. Well, what are you going to do? Oh, right. You follow basketball. What's Chris going to do? What is Chris going to do? Well, he's got 2 kids. He'll figure it out. Anyways, you've been listening to The Student of the Game on the National Gridiron Network. Go ahead and check us out on Twitter at The SOTG. Weasel, what's your Twitter again?
WEASEL, The SOTG.
Weasel _ The SOTG.
No, underscore.
Weasel, The SOTG.
Weasel, The SOTG.
He may be Weasel, The SOTG, but he's still a GFM, a great football mind. Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
That's so awesome. Anyway, so with that in mind, for Stephen Weasel Hurley, I am Kyle Nash, and for Chris Rankin, even though he's not here, check us out. We're going to probably be off next week, at least you guys will be. Because, well, the Super Bowl's over, and I'm finna move. So I gotta do some stuff here for that, just to make sure that I can continue to fight another day. But tomorrow, first of all, you have press coverage. They'll certainly be talking about the Super Bowl, even though they normally focused on the NFL East. Then you also have the NGN Weekly. Press coverage comes on at 7 to 8:30. But the NGN Weekly will be 9 to 11, all Eastern time, and all bringing you football talk just the way you like it. So until next time, folks. Probably try to do a show next week, but if not, because week off, because football season's over. We're getting ready to bring you the off season. There's going to be a whole lot of stuff to talk about, and we'll be talking about Peyton Manning naysayers and how wrong they're getting it probably. But at any rate, until next time, class dismissed.